Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Relationships Rule. My guest this week is Todd Churches. Please welcome him as I do. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Thanks, Jan. It's great to be with you today.
I first met Todd when I heard him speak briefly at an event that I was online listening to, and it was somebody that just piqued my interest immediately, and I wanted to know more. So asked him to be on my show, and he kindly agreed to do so, and here we are. Todd is the CEO of Big Blue Gumball. He's an executive coach, a TEDx speaker, and the author of the book Visual Leadership, Leveraging the Power of Visual Thinking in Leadership and Life. And Todd believes that how we see the world shapes how we lead, communicate, and connect. And he just, well, you'll hear and see what I'm talking about when we get into the conversation. So we're going to explore how visual thinking helps business professionals communicate with clarity, build trust with prospects and partners, and create meaningful, lasting relationships. And I want to start actually by laying the foundation for my audience by asking you to define simply in, you know, just an overview of visual thinking and visual leadership.
Sure, thank you. Yeah, visual leadership is the application of visual thinking to the practice of leadership. So when people say visual thinking, what do we mean by that? It's basically about thinking in pictures as opposed to words and numbers. So it's almost like if you're going to use, and I do a lot of work around metaphor and analogy, it's kind of like if you think about words, I think about like a Word document. If I think about numbers, I think about an Excel spreadsheet. And if I think about pictures, I think about PowerPoint. So it's kind of like taking a PowerPoint view of the world, but it's not that you can just live by PowerPoint alone. You need to have all three formats. So you need to think about words and numbers. And similarly, I would say that there's three Fs: facts, figures, and feelings. People are motivated by feelings. Relationships are built around feelings, right? So you can have all the facts and figures in the world, and you need that to back you up, but it's the feelings that are generated visually that lead to emotionally. So that's in a nutshell, which is an idiom or a metaphor. That's what visual thinking is all about, thinking in pictures and communicating with pictures.
So right off, I have to ask, what if that doesn't come naturally?
What's interesting is our brains are wired visually. So if you were a cave person walking thousands of years ago through the jungle and you heard rustling behind you, what do? You hear the rustling, but you turn around to see what it is. Is it a friend or foe? Is it a saber-toothed tiger, or is it, you know, a buddy from the other cave, right? So it's kind of like, that's just the way we're wired. So as humans, we are wired visually, and we are wired for stories. And similarly, and it's not just visual imagery, but it's also visual language. So that's something we could talk about too. So if I use a metaphor, that's visual. If I tell you a story and paint a picture with words, that's visual. So it's not just about taking in visuals through our physical eye, but it's about thinking in our mind's eye and what we could picture in our mind's eye. So even if you're blind, because sometimes people say, well, if you're blind or sight impaired, or you left your glasses at home, does this not apply to you? It still does. So, yeah.
But I always think of myself, and maybe I'm beating myself up, but I think of myself as more of a left brain person, mm-hmm. and the creative, although I am creative in some ways, I don't discount that for myself. But when it comes to using visual imagery, I struggle. Like, I'm not the storyteller in that regard. And I think that it comes, like, it just drips off your tongue. I mean, you tell stories about everything. Everything has that visual component. And I don't think I would have to think about it to make it happen.
Yeah, some things come more naturally and organically. I was a big reader. I was actually not a business major, as most people think, but I was an English literature major. So my background is in literature and Shakespeare and poetry. Mm-hmm. So through that, I picked up story and language and metaphor and imagery, right? So I just apply that to the world of business. But like even for yourself, you know, you created a podcast, you created a business, you created Relationships Rule as a brand. So you are creative. You just are creative in a different way. And one of the things I love, loved, and I highlighted this, you have all these different, you have key symbols for customizing your LinkedIn profile, right? So you have stars and you have all these different images and symbols. That's visual thinking, right? That's visual communication. So if you just attach an emoji onto a text message, you're visual, right? That's, you're translating. If you just use emojis, people may not know what you're saying. If you just use text, you may not get people's attention. But if you send a text with an emoji or post something on LinkedIn with an emoji, it's that combination that gets people to, gets people's attention, helps them to understand, and gets them to remember, which I phrase as attention, comprehension, and retention. I talk about that in my TED Talk.
Yeah. Right, I saw that, yeah. Okay, so, okay, you've answered that question. You often talk about the power of metaphors and analogies. Can you share an example of how using one helped clarify a complex idea and strengthen a relationship?
Sure. Well, one thing we don't realize is how often we use metaphors and analogies to compare one thing to something else. So when you do that, it explains and say, this is kind of like that. Right. So I use a lot of, for people, some people may be listening on the audio, but if you're watching on the YouTube video, I use a lot of baseball analogies because I'm a big baseball fan. But if I'm talking to someone in Europe, I may use a soccer analogy, but it's called, in Europe, soccer is called football. So if I say football, people maybe in America are thinking of this football as opposed to this football.
And Todd is holding up different toys.
So I use a lot of props in my work, a lot of visuals. But that's the thing. Like I say football, you may be thinking soccer. I may be thinking American football. So we have a disconnect, right? So if you're saying football, if you're talking to someone from Europe, you may want to say American football as opposed to, right? So it's just, again, it's about using a metaphor. It's about speaking the language of your stakeholders. You know, sometimes one of my coaching clients was avoiding the most important issue that he needed to discuss. And I said, I'm holding up a stuffed elephant right now. I said, you're not talking about the elephant. You're not addressing the elephant in the room. Right. So he laughed out loud. But it was really impactful because, one, it's a metaphor, the elephant in the room. It's not a physical, literal elephant. But it's that big thing that we all know is there that everyone's ignoring. Right. So we use metaphors like that all the time, and it just adds color and creativity and impact to what we're talking about.
And a little bit of humor as well.
And humor. Humor goes a long way. Yeah. One of my clients was talking about when I was at IBM in 1980 and I held up this dinosaur, I have this Tyrannosaurus Rex. And I'm like, you know, you're thinking you're impressing people with your wealth of experience, and your younger employees are thinking this guy's a dinosaur. Right. So again, when the impact of that visual, he will not forget, right? I could say, you sound outdated and blah, blah, blah. You hold up the dinosaur. He actually got himself a little dinosaur to keep on his desk to remind him to try to be more current with his stories and his.
Oh, I like that. But I do want to say that the elephant in the room, when you held up the elephant, it reminded me of how you started and your story about going to Hollywood and what you ended up doing. Did you go to Hollywood with the idea of writing there, or did you know what you wanted to do? Because you didn't end up doing there what you wanted to do.
Yeah, I talk about in my TED Talk, I say when I was a kid, I loved television. I was obsessed with Superman and Batman. I loved television. So my dream was to work in television in some way. But as I mentioned to you before, even though I talk loud and fast because I'm from New York, I'm an extreme introvert. So I never saw myself doing anything on a stage or in front of a camera. So I thought being like a TV executive or a producer or something. So when I graduated from college with a master's in communication and I got a job at Ogilvy and Mather Advertising. And speaking of advertising, I don't know if you've watched, I just rewatched all 7 seasons of Mad Men, which is just amazing. So that was a little before my time in the ad agency business, but it just reminded me about my 1 year at Ogilvy and Mather Advertising in New York. And I love the ad agency business, but I had a very numbers-based job. I wanted to be an account exec or do something creative, and the only job I could get was in the media department. And it was all calculating ratings and shares and costs. And I learned a lot, but I was miserable. So I decided to visit a friend in L.A., my college roommate, and I saw the Hollywood sign and said, this is where I have to be. So I went back to New York, gave my 2 weeks' notice, Again, this was the most out of my comfort zone thing I'd ever done in my life up until that point. And I just packed my bags and I moved to LA with no prospects, no jobs. I didn't even know what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to work in Hollywood in some
And you had youth
capacity.
on your side.
Yeah, I was 24 at the time. I had no money. Side note is I needed a survival job and I applied for a job as a waiter at a restaurant and bar. And they didn't need any waiters, but they needed a bouncer. So I took a job as a bouncer at a nightclub. And I thought I'd do that for a few months, and I did it for 3 years. And
Wow.
it totally pushed me out of my comfort zone, and it grew my confidence, my speaking abilities. So whoever thought taking a job, I'm 6'4", but I was very, very skinny. But I wore a suit, and you give people a clipboard and put them behind the velvet rope, and
Oh
all of a
yeah.
sudden, you
Yeah,
have
they're
all the
important.
power in the world. So
That's
what's
right.
amazing is that bouncer job really boosted my confidence and my speaking abilities because I had to interact with people in that job. But then I worked for Aaron Spelling on Dynasty, just putting scripts together as a production assistant. I worked where else? I was at Columbia Pictures. I was in comedy at Disney, and I was in drama program at CBS. Drama program development, CBS. So I had a number of jobs in the TV industry, all entry-level jobs, but it got my foot in the door, gave me a lot of experience. I learned what I was good at and what I wasn't. And because I was an introvert, I thought my work would speak for itself, but I learned the hard way that you have to speak for your work. And I didn't have the ability or the knowledge to do that. So I ended up taking a job as a project coordinator at a theme park company where a friend of mine was working. And they promoted me to project manager, and they said, you have to go to China to oversee the installation of these robotic figures. That's where the elephant comes in, long
Right.
way around. So we
Yeah.
produced these robotic elephants, sheep, and cows for a cultural theme park in Shenzhen, China, which is just over the border from Hong Kong. And I was terrified of going. I didn't even have a passport. I didn't know what I was doing. So I had to go over there with two guys, a mechanical guy and an engineering electrical guy, and we had to install all these, robotic animal figures in this theme park. And in the course of doing that and interacting with people who only spoke Chinese and we only spoke English, we used a lot of drawings and sketching and body language and gesturing. And that's kind of like my origin story for my visual thinking based approach, is the fact that we don't just communicate in words, but in tone of voice, gestures, and in imagery. So I'll stop there. But so
Yeah.
that's kind of like my visual leadership origin story, the first time it hit me that, hey, there's another way and a better way to build relationships and connect with people and to communicate.
Yeah, I love the story. Thank you for sharing that. Also, though, did it then take you, because now, as well as writing your book over the years and putting these things together, you teach this at NYU in Columbia. So I would imagine you had to do a lot more in terms of research of theory and all of that academic side of things. Yes. So what would you say, what are the three sort of biggies that came out of that? Why would somebody, who comes to your courses? Like people who are already in leadership positions or people taking MBAs or, all of that stuff.
Yeah, so I never in a million years ever thought I would teach, because again, I was terrified
Yeah.
of and terrible at public speaking. So that wasn't even on my radar, but which is a metaphor. I always point out my own metaphors to remind people of how often we use metaphors, and then I pluck them out of the air as other people use them. But yeah, so I was out in LA for 10 years and I loved it. But then I got laid off from my last job. I broke up with someone, and my father had open heart surgery. And all of those things, my mother just said to me, I think the universe is saying it's time to come home to New York. So I did, and I moved back to New York, and I had absolutely no idea what I was going to do with my life or my career or anything else. And I ended up taking a job. I remember we used to cut out job ads from the newspaper and clip them and highlight and everything. That's how old I am. But basically, I got a job as a project manager at a training company, a leadership training company, that needed someone to help revamp their mini MBA program. So even though I didn't have a business background, I had done enough business where I knew enough. And my one common theme throughout all my working years up until that point was one after another of horrible bosses. Abusive, sadistic, malicious, narcissistic, horrible bosses. And then when I worked on this in this job for this management training company, I realized that there's an art and science to managing and leading people. And the light bulb went off. Where's my light bulb? I keep my light bulb on my desk. So the light bulb went off, And I realized that managing and leading can be taught and can be learned, right? So that was the first time ever, because I was a project manager. I managed people. I had no idea what I was doing. I figured being bossy was just telling people what to do and how to do it, because that's how think about how we were managed and we were led, right? Most people didn't do any management leadership training or get coaching at that point, at that time. So once I discovered that, I just got obsessed with business books and management. If you're seeing this on video, I have hundreds of business books behind me. I've been reading an average of one management or business book a week since 1998, so 27 years, average of 50 a year. So I'm well into 1,400 business books. In fact, on LinkedIn last week, if anyone goes to LinkedIn, you can see my latest post is the 52 business books I read last year, and I post one every year. So, but that's how I discovered management and leadership as an art and a science, and the way I communicated was visually because of my background as an English major, my years in TV and advertising. It's just the way I thought and processed information. So I started communicating visually, and then a friend of mine, a colleague of mine, who taught at NYU, said, "You'd make a great professor." And I'm like, "Me? Never in a million years." And she introduced me to the head of the department at NYU, and they needed someone to teach a leadership graduate course. And I basically took the leadership training programs I had designed for corporate clients, modified it for an academic audience, and it's mainly people getting their master's in HR and human resource management. And then after teaching at NYU for a couple of years, a friend of mine who was teaching at Columbia said, "I can't teach this semester. Can you fill in for me?" So I became a faculty member at Columbia. So I've been teaching at NYU for 15 years and Columbia for 12 years. And basically, I teach management leadership, but I use my visual thinking methodologies and approaches to help people to do it more effectively. So that's the long answer to how I got into teaching. And so I don't specifically teach visual leadership. I teach leadership with a visual leadership approach.
Well, and it just the thing that you just did it in that story that you just told. You naturally put in something like you talked about the newspaper ads we used to clip out. That's a visual thing, right? You just put those in there so easily. I don't, and I think those are the things that make speakers interesting. And I watch TED Talks or I watch people on stage, and I've been on stage. I talk to audiences, but I don't think that I do those things naturally. I like to engage my audience. I like to talk to people in the audience. I like to get their input, which I see you doing and naturally. But I don't know if I tell stories enough. And that's the thing that I'm always
Interesting.
fascinated by in that
Well,
leadership thing.
here's the good news. It is teachable and it is learnable. So with that, it starts with that awareness. It starts with watching and listening to what other people are doing and saying, "I need to incorporate more of that into my repertoire." So in my book and in my teaching, I break it down to four categories using visual imagery, which includes pictures and props and anything you can take in through the eye, maps, diagrams, all that stuff is visual imagery. Category two is using mental models and frameworks, so a four-box matrix or a circle or any models that we use, like for example Maslow's hierarchy of needs, or Simon Sinek has his circle of, starts with why, right? So those are mental models or frameworks. Category three is metaphor and analogy, which we've talked about a little bit, using something to compare to something else. And then category four is storytelling with extra bonus points for humor if and when appropriate, right? So those are like my four buckets. So that's what I teach and train people to do. So I actually wrote an article that anyone could look up for Inc. Magazine called "Can You Draw What Your Company Does?" Right? So if you had to explain what you do, and I have a framework called, I have it on a post-it here, similar to, different from, better than. If you had to explain what your company does, what is it similar to? How is it different? And how is it better? Because if it's not, people learn things through connections to what they already know. So if you say it's kind of like this, that's the similar to. If it's not different, then why do we need you? So it's got to be different in some way. And then how is it better? Like, so for example, your Relationships Rule podcast, you could say it's similar to these other podcasts that are about relationship building and building community and connection and that type of thing. Here's how it's similar. Here's how I'm different because of X, Y, and Z. And here's how it's better. Your guests or your approach or whatever, your interviewing skills, this is why it's better than others, right? So if you can articulate that, people will say, "Oh, I want to hear your podcast," right? So that's a framework that I use and that I teach people, but we think through analogy and we connect the dots. That's the basics of learning, right? We connect new information to what we already know and kind of grow that tree, to use that metaphor, right? And even as I say, branch out. So Because, like with trees, I could use all these analogies. I could say we plant the seed for ideas, we branch out in new directions, we see which ideas bear fruit, we get to the root of the problem, right? We use that language all the time. For some people, it comes naturally, other people need to work on it. But the key is to keep developing those skills to think and communicate visually, and that makes us more effective speakers, coaches, et cetera.
Yeah, that, and it just, I love how it just is so innate for you. You used another one at the end of your, I think it was at the end of your TED talk. I'm not sure where I saw it, but, and it's so easy. It was like the past, the present, the future. The
Oh, the
rearview
leadership journey metaphor that I use in my TED
mirror.
talk?
Yeah, I guess that's what it was. It was the rearview mirror.
So I actually use that next week. My new NYU class starts next Tuesday night, so I was just preparing. So I give them a picture of just the in front, sitting in the driver's seat of a car, and I talk about what leadership lessons can we take from this image, right? So you think, oh, this will take 5 minutes. It takes an hour to have that discussion. The
Really?
windshield represents the future and the road ahead. The rearview mirror represents two things: one, where we came from and how we got here, and also looking in the mirror literally to self-reflect on who we are and how we are as leaders. And then your dashboard shows all your metrics of how well you're doing. How do you measure success? So in a car, it's about where you're going and where you came from and how fast you're going and if you need oil or if your car's about to overheat. What's your dashboard in your life, right? In your business. How do you measure success? What's the ROI of where you're spending your time? So just using that metaphor that leadership is a journey, and there's two things. One, I talk about this in my class. We are on a journey together for the next 14 weeks from January to May. For this whole semester, we are on this leadership journey together, but at the same time, each one of you in the class is on your own personal journey, right? So just that metaphor is really powerful. And then people start asking, do you have enough fuel in the tank? Are you on the right road? Also, as a leader, are you in the driver's seat, the passenger seat in the back, or in the back seat, right? Just that has a lot to do with how you lead. Some leaders need to be very hands-on. It's like I'm controlling the steering wheel and the gas and the brake. Some leaders say, I'll move over, I will navigate, other people will drive. And some leaders say, I'm going to sit in the back seat, I trust my people to get us, and I'm here if you need me. Right? So just that conversation, and again, that's the metaphor I use it to illustrate at the end of my TED talk, but that's such a powerful image and metaphor of the
It is.
leadership journey, and you could again spend hours talking about it.
Yeah, it is. And so, okay, so now I'm getting inspired because
Yeah.
I'm thinking that if you can find something as simple as that, which is so complicated, but it's like it's the creative side of you though that starts with all those different things around it,
Yeah,
right? From
yeah.
the back seat to the front seat to the mirror to the everything. It's all, yeah. And so you
Yeah.
start to think more visually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's about simplifying complexity. If you think about it, work and life are so complex. If you have an idea or a business proposal or whatever, how do you simplify, not dumb it down and not strip it of its nuance, but simplify the complexity so someone else can say, I see what you're saying, right? I get it. So like an exercise I might do in the classroom is I'll say, leadership, how is leadership like a blank? And you have to use any object in the room. So it could be, how is leadership like a clock? How is leadership like that banana sitting on your desk? How is leadership? And again, it forces people to connect the dots and find, there's a quote by the Greek philosopher Heraclitus, a wonderful harmony arises when we join together the seemingly unconnected or disconnected, right? So if you take two disconnected things and connect them, all of a sudden it could serve as a catalyst to new ideas, innovation, metaphors, ways of thinking about things.
Yeah, that's fascinating, actually. Okay, I thought of something then. Oh, I know. Just on an aside, I just wanted to ask you because I'm still looking at all those books behind
Yeah.
you. Of the 52 books that you read last year, what are your top three?
Oh, that's a tough one off the top of my head. I'll talk about the one that's most current because I teach this in a leadership workshop. Joel Barker's book, Paradigms. Joel Barker, he's a futurist. He just passed away literally a year ago this month. And I got to know him, got to be friends with him. I watched his video like 30 years ago in a leadership training course I took. I got so obsessed with his concepts. And if you think about what is a paradigm, it's become kind of a cliche, but your paradigm is the lens, using a visual metaphor, the lens through which you see the world, right? So we all see the world through our life experiences, our upbringing, our education, our culture, all of those things shape what you see, but also, and also how you interpret it, but also what you miss and what you don't see. Right? So just the concept of paradigms, and when we talk about a paradigm shift, it's not about like switching from Coke to Pepsi, but it's like switching from water out of your tap to bottled water, or to start. So it's kind of like changing the whole dynamic of how you do things. So in March, I'm teaching a leadership program for Wall Street traders, and this will be my 21st time over the last 18 years teaching this program. It's at a client, but it's for Wall Street traders who fly in from all over the world to take this program. And we start the morning of day one of this 3-day program talking about, I show them the 20-minute paradigms video. It's really dated because they're talking about the latest audio music technology is the MP3 player. So it's long before DVD. So it's after the cassette, but before CDs, and definitely before Spotify and streaming. But so the content is outdated, but the concepts are timeless. That's the way we put it. So it's like, if you could take these concepts and apply it to today's world, how is AI changing our world? How is this new technology changing our world? So that's the book that I'm re I not only read books, a lot of books, but I also reread a lot of books. So it's interesting to go back to some of the quote classics like Good to Great, or In Search of Excellence, and see what still holds up 30 years later and what is outdated. And so that's an interesting exercise.
I'm sure. And it's funny because it's like I'm a movie person. You just mentioned you just rewatched Mad Men, all
Man, yeah.
7 seasons. I never would think to do that because there's so many new things I want to see that I haven't seen. And yet, every time someone talks about the brilliance of so and so in that movie, I think, oh, I should watch that again because it was really good. And then I never get to it. So I should start making a list because I think that, yeah, there are some worth doing that with, books
And
and
it's
films.
interesting seeing it through the lens of who we are today, right? Like, I
Correct.
was an English major, right? So I read Hamlet for the first time at age 15. Reading Hamlet at 15 is different than reading it at 30, which is the Hamlet's age at the time of the play, and then reading it at 40 or 50, right? So the book stays the same. It's still Shakespeare's original from 400 plus years ago, but you've changed, right? So there's that saying, a person can't set foot in the same river twice because the person changes as does the river, right? So that's a metaphor, right? So it's interesting to see things through a new lens. And my favorite quote, I know you like to hear that, is the quote by Marcel Proust that I end my TED talk with, that the real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new lands, but in seeing with new eyes. So just seeing the world, seeing your relationships through new eyes, seeing your business through new eyes. It's again, it's one of the foundations of my visual leadership approach, is having a picture in your mind's eye of where you were, where you are today, and where you're going, and then saying, all right, am I on the right path? Am I on the right track? Am I going 90 miles an hour, but in the wrong direction? Right? So again, we can continue that journey travel metaphor
There's
for
another one.
forever.
I love it. I think you're actually, you've got me thinking, and I think that if I pay more attention to it, you can develop it. So I see that now. Yeah, for sure. One of your lines that I love is, if we can get people to see the invisible, we can inspire them to do the impossible. How does that apply to building relationships and inspiring trust in today's business world, would you say?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, think of someone that you admire or that you might like to meet, right? So you can picture that and you say, oh, it's impossible. If I can never meet this person. You put someone up on a pedestal, they're untouchable, they're unreachable, but they're not. You could send them, and you could like and comment on their posts and connect with them. You can reach out to them. You can go to, here's how I was telling someone earlier today, he said, how did you get Dan Pink to write a blurb for your, hold on, my book, Visual
Oh, there you
Leadership?
go.
He said, how did you get Dan Pink to write a blurb for your book? And I said, he was one of the people I would say, in my fantasies, oh, I'd love to get him to blurb my book, but he doesn't know me. I don't know him, other than the fact that I'm a big fan of his work. He was doing a book launch event in New York. I went to hear him speak. I waited online to get my book signed, but instead of racing to go first, I waited to go last. Everyone else was gone. He just plopped down in his chair. He was exhausted. And he said, have a seat. And we ended up talking for 20 minutes.
Yeah, perfect.
And I said to him, I'm writing a book. Would you, you know? And he said, when you get to that point, I wasn't even at the point yet, but I said, I'm.
Yeah.
He said, send me, you know, send me an email and see what I could do. And he generously and kindly responded immediately, gave me a great blurb, and now he's on my book jacket cover. So again,
and
it
if you
take,
don't
again,
ask.
I'm an extreme introvert. That took every ounce of courage to force myself to do that. And yet I built that relationship based on, I picture, all right, am I better going first or last? I picture that in my mind. So I
Yeah.
envisioned it,
Yeah.
and it turned out even better than I expected because he ended up spending 15, 20 minutes talking to me at the
Yeah,
end.
fantastic. I've heard stories like that before. And I think for me, I always say, if you don't ask, you'll never know, right? You don't get. And because the answer is always no. If you don't ask, the answer is always no. But I have to come back to that introvert thing for a minute because my understanding of being an introvert is not really that, it's more that you don't, that you're, you get your energy from being more of being alone. Like you told me that you started out writing, you love to write and you behind the scenes stuff.
Yeah, if I
You
could lock
have
myself away and read for 12 hours a day, that's
to.
my dream life, right?
Okay, but that doesn't mean you're an introvert, does it?
No, it has a lot of people associate introversion with being shy or quiet or scared of people. But
Yeah,
for many
no.
years, I had social anxiety disorder, which I still do, but I force
Oh,
myself
right.
beyond it. I still get the butterflies. And
That's good.
social events, I'm usually the last one to get there and the first one to leave because it takes every. I feel
Okay.
like I'm. When I'm at a social event, I feel like I'm walking on a tightrope across the Grand Canyon. Like I'm gonna fall off,
Not
and
good.
I just can't wait to get to the other side or get home, right?
Okay.
So I think that's a big. Susan Cain is the guru of introversion.
Yes.
She's the one who wrote.
Yes.
She wrote the book Quiet, which is on my
Yes.
shelf. She wrote that. So yes, it is about where we get our energy from. Introverts prefer to think before we speak, as opposed to some
Yeah.
people speak before they think. So there's a
Yeah.
lot of common traits. But the main reason I consider myself an introvert is because that's I get my energy. My ideal balance would be 80% of alone time and 20% interacting with other people, right? A colleague friend of mine, he's the opposite. He likes spending 90% of his time around other
Yeah.
people and only
Yeah.
10% alone. So it's like I get energized by being with my own ideas and
Yeah.
designing and reading and creating, and being with other people just drains my energy and
Yeah,
gets me
yeah. So
exhausted.
that is definitely then true
Yeah,
that
yeah.
yeah.
So,
So
but I'm
you
not
must.
shy or quiet, and I love talking one-on-one like this with people. I
Yeah.
love sharing my ideas. I'm a million times more comfortable on a stage than I am in the audience. So that's another example of an
That's
introvert.
a per, that's a really interesting
Yeah.
example, right? Yeah, because you can't see everybody, or you focus on one person, or the lights are too bright,
Yeah,
and
you don't
you.
have that awkwardness that do I have to talk to the
Yeah.
person sitting next? Even like flying on a plane, it's like, oh, I'm gonna have to talk. I hope this person doesn't speak to me sitting next to me.
Oh, and I'd be that person. I'd be that person. And I'd know your life history in 5 minutes if you let
Well,
me.
here's a real life funny story. Real quick, I wrote a blog post about it. I was flying down. I'm a member of Marshall Goldsmith's 100
Yes.
Coaches. He's one of the top executive coach in the world. I was flying down to Orlando for an event. It was actually the Global Gurus event. I was nominated as one of the top 30 leadership experts in the world. I came in number 30, so I was literally in last place on the list. But I got an award and the plaque and everything, and Marshall Goldsmith was going to be there. And the guy sitting next to me on the plane, I'm like, oh, I hope he doesn't talk to me. He elbowed me in the ribs a few times. He's just annoying me. I got to the event, and he was there. He was
Of
one of the
course.
100 coaches. I
Yeah.
didn't know him, didn't talk to him, and then we laughed about it. He said, why do I know you? You look familiar. I'm like, because you just elbowed me in the ribs for like 3 hours on the flight from New York to Orlando. But like, yeah, we could have been talking the whole time to someone who I had a connection with, but we didn't discover that connection until we got there. So again, that's the thing. It's like you never know who you're sitting next to on a plane.
Right. That's right, for sure. And actually, as I recall, I think from that, connection with Marshall Goldsmith, we discovered that Sarah, was it
MacArthur?
Sarah MacArthur, yeah,
Yeah.
that you knew her, and
Yes, yes.
yeah, and that you're going to see her film, right? Or
Yeah, I
did
saw it. I actually saw it at a
it?
screening in New York, and it was great on because I teach a whole module in my class on servant leadership featuring Frances Hesselbein and
Oh.
Marshall Goldsmith. And yeah, so Sarah's amazing. She published one of my articles for Leader to Leader on visual thinking 2 years ago. So
Yeah,
yeah,
she was
she
on
is.
my podcast earlier, or maybe last year, I can't remember.
Yeah, so
Anyway,
you never know who so where you have
that's
those
right.
commonalities and connections unless you talk to people. Say, do you know so and so? Or you
Yeah.
connect with them on LinkedIn or like and comment on their posts and see who else is commenting. And it's like, oh, I didn't know you know so and so. So it's really
Exactly.
so relationships do rule because none of us can make a living in a or very few of us can make a living without interacting with clients, colleagues, people referring each other. So it's all part of. So again, we have to kind of, especially if you're an entrepreneur and you work for yourself, which is very isolating and lonely. So we have to give a shout out to David Schreiner Kahn because we met at his Smashing
That's
the
right.
Plateau community. But through community, we meet individuals, and then you never know where things could lead.
Yeah, exactly. And it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. You are a wealth of knowledge, and I feel and hear your passion for what you do, as well as seeing all those visuals that you paint for the picture for. So I think that I know my audience is going to enjoy this, and I want you to tell them where they can find you and your book, and I'll put it all in the show notes.
Sure. The best, well, toddchurches.com. Just go to my website and it's CHERCHES. And there you can find my TED Talk, information about my book and my visual leadership approach. But also connect with me on LinkedIn. Just say you saw me on Janice's show and we'll connect on LinkedIn. And I post on LinkedIn all the time and happy to engage with others on LinkedIn.
Sounds delightful. Thank you so much, Todd, for being here. Thank you to my audience again for being loyal listeners and now viewers. And please, if you enjoyed what you heard from Todd, seek out his work and leave us a review. We always like that. It helps going forward. So remember to stay connected and be remembered. Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.